and welcome into the Facts Not Feelings podcast, powered by BZ Consultants Group, with your host, Brooke Furness. Each week, I sit down with experts in their respected fields as we discuss how we can move this wonderful automotive industry forward by differentiating facts from feelings. Our conversation explores how my guests got to where they are today and how they achieve success. All right, let's jump in. Imagine a world where the automotive industry shatters all stereotypes, where women lead boldly and diversity drives innovation. Today on Facts Not Feelings, we are joined by Laura Murphy, or you might know her as Law, maybe possibly as well. She's a visionary transforming this dream into reality. She's not just breaking barriers, though. She's building bridges for women and underrepresented groups to thrive in automotive marketing. Stay with us as Laura shares her journey, fueled by a powerful legacy and a passion for change. You will not want to miss a moment of this inspiring conversation. Laura, welcome into the show.
Thank you so much, Brooke. I'm so excited to be here.
I am stoked. We were talking offline of how long it's taken for me to get this, to get you on the show. We officially met back in Women Automotive, which is just around the corner here. Yeah. And I'm so grateful for that. And I actually had a firestorm with a client that I had to step out. So I didn't see your whole I Am Remarkable keynote. So I'm like, okay, I get a personalized one right now. So I'm okay with this.
Oh, that's good. I don't know. I hadn't heard if you were going or not this year, but if so, they've asked me to do another one. So there's another opportunity.
Yes.
I was like, oh, are you guys sure? Because it's like, it doesn't change. It's the same workshop. And they were like, no, we think it's important. And it was, there was unfortunately a lot of feelings that came out of it. But actually, the best part about it was facts over feelings. So it very much was on brand with you, Brooke. And that's really the biggest takeaway. I'm going to save that because we're going to talk about I'm Remarkable in a little bit, but yeah.
I'm so excited to jump into this. And it was when I got the notes over here, which we're going to get into in this first question, I had no idea about your grandfather like that. So with that, we'll just jump into this. So your grandfather played such a pivotal role in shaping your perspective. How does his teachings and your early experiences at his dealership continue to influence you at work and your leadership style today?
Yeah, I love that you started with this question. Thank you. It actually chokes me up a little bit. It really means a lot to talk about my family and to talk about my legacy because there's a couple of things that I want to just be remembered by. One is my love for my family. Family first, always. Anyone who knows me, works with me, knows that it's not even a question. Whatever the question is, if it's your family and you need to prioritize that, like that's first. And the second thing is fun. I just try to bring fun into absolutely every situation. So it's laughing at work because we just found out the week before spring break that we're going to have a gathering where we need to all come together with some events and some ideas, right? As a big, big group. And they were like, "La, you're on the fun committee." And I was like, yay.
The fun
My
committee.
Brand is working. Yeah, the fun committee. So anyways, getting back to the question, because I got way off that track to answer
totally
the
fine.
Question about my grandfather. I really appreciate that you asked this because he, at one point in time, my grandfather, yes, he owned a dealership. And at one point in time, it was the oldest Chevrolet dealership in the United States, which fueled two things, my love for the automotive industry, especially the retail side. But secondly, also is just my love for Chevrolet, which sounds bizarre to say because I don't work there now. But my grandfather and, you know, his grandfather actually and his brothers converted an old livery stable that was, you know, a working farm in Moline, Kansas, into a Chevrolet Oldsmobile dealership. And it was in the family for many, many years, many decades, many generations until my dad, unfortunately, when I was very young, you know, there was a mishap in the service department, arson, and there was a fire. And unfortunately, it burned to the studs. My grandfather had passed away unexpectedly just before that, and his brothers were kind of haphazardly running the store, just not, you know, fully meeting grandpa's standards, really. And so my dad actually went on to work for Chevrolet, but he was a what they called like a central office guy out of Detroit. So that's why I lived in Detroit twice, but we moved like 13 times by the time I was 12. Settled in Rochester, Michigan. So I call myself a Detroit local. I stayed in Michigan and I went to Michigan State University. But again, back to the question, it's just that tie back to my grandfather and to the dealership gave me not only the love of automotive retail and of Chevrolet, but also it's just really always been in the back of my mind. I've spent my first half of my Google 10 years on the brand tier one side, working on like being an expert on automotive and digital and going in and consulting, but I've always been drawn to retail. And so right around the start of COVID, there was more emphasis on like, well, you know, what does it look like for us to go and talk to people who are regional directors and zone managers or, you know, FDAF members, or I'm naming a couple of the automotive industries. I don't mean to exclude anyone, you know, Toyota, we love you too, whoever, right?
We love all the OEMs, we're good.
Yeah, more so is just to say that, you know, we're really kind of in a position where we're learning and we're growing and we're staffing. And my draw and to get back to automotive retail was so heavy that I kind of raised my hand to say, I'll explore that world. And what does it look like to go to some of these more, you know, women in automotive is a great example of something I would have not been invited to previously. But when you're working more on the retail side, you know, a fix ops specialist in a department at a store, all the way to an agency account director working on a big brand OEM, you know, servicing lots of their TV and digital and whatever spend, there's varying degrees of automotive retail. And that's what makes it so exciting. There's so many agencies, there's so many players, there's so many partners. There's so much of an opportunity to build your own personal connections and your own personal brand too. Meeting you, Brooke, was the highlight of the year last year for me. Yes, at Women in Automotive. And it was just like, I just happened to walk into one of your keynotes and I'd never heard of you before. I just looked on like, who are the choices? I'm like, this sounds interesting. And then you're like showing us all your sweet shoes, all your Jordans, and like that you're, you know, a Bulls girl, you're from Chicago, which is near and dear to my heart, and all of the things. So yeah, it's just really cool. Like, working on automotive retail, you can continue learning too. There is like a point in brand marketing for everyone where you're just like, well, that's it. Like, we've hit the wall. We've tested everything we can do. The launch has happened. We're not the sell, you know, we're not at the dealerships, like really on the hook for those big numbers to deliver. We just had to get them marketed so they could be built and then delivered. But like, thinking about taking wholesale and like my grandfather did. The other reason why I know it was really hard for my dad to not follow in his footsteps and take over the store, and not knowing if things would have ended up much differently, was just watching my grandfather worry so much about the people he employed at his store in Moline, Kansas, and like stay up super late at night worrying about, you know, if they didn't make sales numbers on Oldsmobiles and Chevrolets in the Southeast Kansas region, like tons of families wouldn't be fed. So that was like, just people underestimate how important our local retailers are and how important it is that we continue to support them too.
Amen. Amen. There's so many things to say to that. And it's true. I mean, the very last part of we as a community in the automotive industry are essential to the local community. There are very few other businesses out there that contribute more to local events and local community events and local community whatever than an auto dealership. I know that we're trusted as much as a politician, and that unfortunately is something we continue to battle, which is awesome. Like, people would rather go to the dentist than go to a car dealership. That being said, is knowing like, okay, these are really good people. And because of this industry, I have lifetime friends that I would have never, ever met that are the most incredible human beings that I know that they take a bullet for me. I take a bullet from them. Like, they know more about me, and I can trust them with anything, whether it's good, bad, and different, that I know I can trust them because they are friends for life. And if it wasn't for this industry and the incredible humans in it, I wouldn't know them, but I wouldn't know you. I mean, I love this industry, bottom line.
Yeah. Well, and it's super important that we have more Brooks, because you give a voice to all of these like badass ladies that are out there hiding in plain sight, is what I like to say. Like, the more we can talk about them, put names to them, and raise them up and bring them on these amazing shows like yours, the better. So thanks for giving those women a platform too.
Oh, thank you. It honestly is my pleasure. As we were talking before offline as well, just like the females that went before us, they paved a path. Then there was us, and then the women before them, I get that.
Yeah.
And then you've got this other generation that's coming up that they're just trying to figure out how the system, how the industry works. It's like, we can do as a industry, especially as females, and we need the male portion as well to do the same, to lift them up and show them the way and help them and answer their questions and be their buddy system at a conference I've never been to. Like that one, I remember the first conference I went to, and you're a little overwhelmed. You're like, I don't know anybody. I'm just going to like sit back and not ask any questions. It's like, just help, lend us a helping hand. Like that's all, just lend a helping hand, whether it's a guy, a girl, but especially as females. There was a very, very long time, as I'm hearing, it'll be redundant for my women automo speech, but that I had like one, two good girlfriends. All my friends were guys. I was like, I just can't deal with the cattiness and they're coming at, you know, all these different things. I was like, guys, they have a problem. They just duke it out and they're good to go. And it took later into my life. And it's actually more towards when I got into automotive and later in life that we keep a text chain of these incredible badass women that are just absolutely incredible. And I'm so grateful for them. But once again, they're an automotive. Like they're so awesome. So I 100% agree with you on everything that you said. All right, let's dive into, I'm going to say hashtag I am remarkable. Dive into how those I am remarkable workshops empower not only the participants, but especially women and underrepresented groups to acknowledge and communicate their achievements confidently?
Thank you for asking. I would absolutely love to. So what I am remarkable, what a workshop even is, just to give you a quick overview, it's 90 minutes of personal development. Originally, it was created by two female engineers at Google who created essentially a structure for something they put each other through come review time when they had noticed a couple of review cycles that although they were doing the same, you know, advancements in engineering as some of their male counterparts, they were getting passed by. And so this essentially workshop format that was created by these two women now lives on today. It's moved outside of Google. One of the women, Anna, took it with her to the same website as before, iamremarkable.com, will now work. I know you're going to flash this for us too, but on remarkability.org. So yeah, so you'll see that remarkability.org URL. But it's really basically kind of the double down on you part of the day if you make the commitment to sign up for one of these workshops. The best way to find a workshop, if it's not something that's already being offered at your company, like at General Motors, they're doing such wonderful things there through their Women at ERG Plus and their women in other organizations within automotive groups there within marketing. They have the GM Latino Org embracing these workshops as well. So lots of companies, Ford included, and other Fortune 500 non-automotive companies really believe in this type of workshop because it's free. It lives at remarkability.org, and it's personal development. And it's not only for women. It's really quickly the women who developed it, Brooke, realized that they had something that especially underrepresented groups could benefit from. And then, you know, while it expanded to people of all color and races, it expanded to everyone. So today it's for everyone globally. We invite men, white men, yes, please come be allies with us. We know you're not allowed to call yourself that, but you show up at one of these workshops, check. Yes, you are. You're putting the time and the work in. But that's it. It's also a framework that is designed to be based around one premise, and that is it's not bragging when it's based on facts.
Amen.
Right? It's kind of like you get it from there. So, you know, LinkedIn has a wonderful way of finding these workshops. Again, they're free. So if anyone ever charges you for one, report them back to me because they are sort of one of those things that the goodness lives on through just like continuing to offer them and to get people to take them. I've facilitated actually over 65 of them myself the last 3 years. I love them. They're kind of like the air I breathe. I do them just, you know, in my free time. I can't use work time when we're doing facilitations and workshops, but evenings and mornings and on the weekends, when there's an opportunity to schedule these in my free time with some of the other local Detroit facilitators, I'm the center of that sort of communication, and I help get those scheduled. And we just do it locally in the Detroit area, but we get a lot of requests. So I'm helping to lead them is supposed to be giving to them, but everyone who attends a workshop ends up giving me so much more by, you know, I'm always so amazed, Brooke, at what people start and finish 90 minutes as. So mm-hmm. It's cool. I feel very lucky.
I agree. I absolutely love what you all are doing, and to watch it and the purpose behind it, everything. I mean, it's not just, hey, to your point of, it's not bragging if it's true. Like if there's confidence, and then there's you being a little cocky, there's a little bit difference. Yes. But what if it's true? Like, but too often as females is that we won't voice our, whatever we're trying to say, well, that's your opinion. It could be a fact. It could be just opening your mouth and actually having words come out, because like, well, what do they think about this? And we all know that we'll be overqualified for a job and not apply for it. But the guy who is not even qualified is going to apply for it. But this constant self-doubt that we as females have, I mean, so just continue the amazing work. And that second, then the next question a little bit here is that you've been doing this for a hot minute. You've got 25 years of experience in our industry, which is absolutely awesome. Once again, if you don't know her, please get in touch with Law. In fact, I'm going to put your thing up here one more time, because if you scan the QR code right here, which you all know I do this throughout the show, is it's going to link to the I Am Remarkable, which is remarkability.com. I just had this up here a second ago and just lost it here. It's going to take you to this site. So just scan her QR code, click on it. That's going to take you. You've got her, all of this ways you can get in touch with her, but definitely go check her out. So let's go back to this. You've had 25 years experience in this industry. How has your journey evolved from the initial roles to finding your passion and helping others break barriers?
Oh, this is such a good question. It's my reaction every time I hear it is the same, because it's like, I could go so many directions with this, because again, it was really nice how we finished that last statement with this. My participants are always surprising to me how they start and they finish. And, you know, I'm nowhere close to the end, hopefully. But where I'm at, I mean, I'm definitely about midway, I think, right, in my career, 25 years in since graduating from Michigan State all those years ago. That girl, though, that walked out of East Lansing and into the ad agency, like, ready to be like, okay, I'm here to go on an amazing jet plane shoot in, stay in the Viceroy for 6 weeks in Santa Monica and film Tiger Woods. Eventually I did get to do that. So not to brag, but those were some of the most fun days of my life, was working on the ad agency side and filming Tiger Woods shoots. I'm going to save those stories for our next Vegas trip together.
But I cannot wait to hear
wild times. Wild times. It was fun. So anyways, but helping others, because that's your question really, is like, how have I really embraced my passion to break those barriers? Maybe I've been thinking about if I should tell this story or not. I'll say it this way. I'm a part of a professional organization in Detroit. It's a nonprofit and it's a marketing organization. And I'm lucky enough to have been on the board of directors for the last few years. I'm the president as of June. I will be in 118 years of this organization. I'll be the 9th female president. So wow. I think what's really exciting is I've been a member of this organization for 25 years. And when I started in this organization, I would attend the events, Brooke, and I would feel like I do not belong here. You know, that inferiority complex. And like, not only because was I hella young, squeaky clean right out of Michigan State, I didn't know anything. I learned enough from being in 7 elementary schools and 2 middle schools or whatever it was. I'd learned enough of how to like adapt to people's personalities. But gosh, I screwed up so many times early in my career, so many times. Like, I don't even know how those first few years I was able to keep my job, because I was just like, oh, that mistake just cost the ad agency like actual money that comes out of like a bank account, right? And you're like, what? Somebody paid for that? Like, you don't think that's how business works somehow. So yeah, I think that now, because I felt like I just did not belong at all in that club and I stopped attending events and I was like, shame on me. And then I really just like dove all the way back into getting involved and being on the board and now being the president, I hope that I can show that you can look like me, you can have very little experience, but just like stay on course and don't let people tell you that you don't love something. I don't know about you, Brooke, but so many people along my career journey were like, you don't want to do that. That's not for you. You don't love that. Like automotive, Laura, Jesus, get out of automotive. Like, you know, Little Caesars is here. We go advertise pizza or Quicken Loans or whoever. And you're just like, no, I really do like automotive. I don't care if that's, you know, not, you know, New York or LA of me. It's very Midwest. Okay. Yeah. So what about it? We're so lucky to be a part of such a cool industry.
I agree.
So, yeah. So maybe through that, even though that it is a professional career oriented organization, it's just like, I hope that like seeing another female stand up in front of this traditionally large gentleman's led organization, just say like, we got to keep evolving. And I don't even, truth be told, Brooke, I don't even have the right look to me. Like we should really be diversifying ourselves even more. We should find more females of color actually coming up behind me. There is one I'm so excited about. There's lots of women coming up behind me that will take over the role. But I'm not even as diverse as this club in Detroit needs to be. I don't even look like or reflect like the larger community does. So hopefully we continue to just keep evolving and changing.
Amen. And that's a couple things I preach a lot. I don't know if I've necessarily done on the show, but for me, it's like a personal thing for me is that the minute you have a chance to get outside of America, be the minority, to understand, especially as a white human being, understand what it's like to be the minority. Understand that, hey, there's more to life than, and as crazy as the world is, as crazy as everything is going on with everything in our nation. That being said, get outside of America to understand how lucky we are. And that's like, I lived in Japan for a year. Believe me, as a blonde, I definitely, white blonde, I stood out. And working with Broadway shows. And I mean, there were multiple times that there was maybe two other people that looked like me. And I was like, that right there is to understand what it's like to put yourself in some of those shoes to an extent. There's things that I will never understand because I'm white. I'm fully aware of that. But put yourself in those maybe uncomfortable situations, or you may perceive it as being uncomfortable, to understand the bigger picture of what other people are going through. And that's, I'm just a huge, huge advocate to get outside of America, and I love America, but get outside of America and understand what it's like to be in a third world country. I mean, there was times where living in Japan where, yes, Tokyo was great and all the fun cities, but we were also in cities where they didn't have internet. Like, understand what it's like to not have all the amenities that we just have at our fingertips. And then I get a little passionate about that a little bit. So it's a big one, and to understand how this goes. And to your point about sticking with something. So if you're new in the industry, you're most likely going through it. I go back to before I got into automotive, I was going through college and I was working two full-time jobs and a part-time job to put myself through school. One of them was in the food industry. I worked as a waitress for Texas Roadhouse. And the very first table I got, I go to take it's a six top, it might have been eight top, go to take the waters out and they spill all over the family. Then is it not like you just get the flush? You're like, I don't have to do. And it was the first table on my own without, having some there. Then the next thing, the runner comes out and leaves the food in front of the table, never disperses it. So I come back like 5 minutes later, the food's just sitting there. And I was like, oh my God, like what the hell just happened here? They're like, yeah, it's just been sitting here. We didn't know if we should grab it. At that point, I take care of the food. I run outside. I was just like, I don't know what, I feel so horrible because to your point, not only did I let the staff down, I let the company down, so everything's going to be comped. Luckily, I didn't order alcohol. I just so many things. I was like, oh my God, I feel so, I was like, I'm never going back.
There goes my whole paycheck.
Yes. I was like, just fire me right now. And the manager just goes, Brooke, do you know how often this happens on your first time? Like not to this extent, but he goes, shit like this happens. Like it's going to be okay. You're doing a great job. And I'm so grateful that he said that because cell phones weren't really around at that point, but I was ready just to go home. I was like, I'm done. Like I have screwed up so badly and you guys shouldn't even want me here. But by sticking with it was I absolutely loved working there, and everyone should work in retail. Everyone should work in the food industry to understand one, how to tip. Please, for the love of God, learn how to tip. But also like
over tip.
Like 20% is the bare minimum. I'm just going to throw it out there.
Minimum.
Yeah, it's 100%. Huge learning experience for me, massive learning experience for me, just to stick with it. It's, yeah. So go ahead.
Brooke, what is it called? What is it called when you're a server and you've screwed up massively and then like you say those, oh, is it I'm blown or something like that? When you come in and you say like the keywords that like your other co-servers are like, okay, that means we need to start divvying up her section. She just hit her limit. Isn't that a
I'm sure there's something I can tell you.
Brene Brown,
where I was from, where I went to was serving, it was, there was nothing along those lines. It was just, oh, Brooke's is drowning over here. Maybe we should help her. Like, no, I don't. No, I'm sure there is one. That was a very, very long time ago that I was a server. So I don't know.
It's so funny though, because I think of you at Texas Roadhouse and I'm like, oh, she slayed that.
It took a minute, but don't worry. In case you're all wondering, yes, we had to have black shoes and I had the Jordan pure black. Cause I had to have black shoes. I was like, well, if I'm going to be my feet, it got to be Jordans. So yes, I did rock the Jordans for it. And I still have them this day and they are, I don't know why. Cause they are beat to hell, but I still have them. Okay. So let's go. You've talked about I'm Unremarkable. You've talked about how you're helping other people and breaking down barriers, giving a voice to almost the voiceless sometimes. So as a mentor and coach, what approaches do you use to encourage women to pursue leadership roles and then think beyond traditional career paths in the automotive retail?
Okay. Yes. I'll give the example of I've got three mentees this school year. All three of them are females this year. Luck of the draw, I guess. Two of them are Michigan State seniors, and one of them is a Wayne State senior. It's interesting because all three of them come from different cultural beliefs, cultural values, languages, and just initial reaction was like, okay, I'm going to kind of mentor the way I usually mentor when I've not been as ambitious as I have been this year, taking on three of them. You know, I couldn't let we just didn't have enough mentors. And I was like, we got to have, and I love to do it. I love to take, I just get so much more out of being a mentor to a mentee. But the two at Michigan State are really kind of near and dear to my heart just because I walked in their shoes. I totally understand that when they say they've got the stresses of advertising 483, I'm like, I remember that. I go back and I teach at Michigan State often on Fridays when I can get like a half day and go and do a guest lecture. So I'm there and they've had a rough go at Michigan State with, you know, a mass shooting last year. And they, you know, these seniors in college this year kind of blew me away when they reminded me that COVID happened their senior year of high school and their freshman year of college. They were like robbed of two of the most pivotal years where you find out who you are and what you are. So this has been the craziest year to take on mentees because they're like definitely a little bit more fragile, I think, in a way, just because of course they are. Like, think about everything that these guys have gone through. But as their mentor, you know, it is a lot like coaching them. I do think of this as like the more you remember the coaches that were, the more they were your cheerleader, gave you really in the moment direct feedback, but weren't like tearing you a new one just to rebuild you or draw you back up or like take on a really extremist approach. But the ones that also set kind of like what a leader looks like and acted like a leader, didn't just talk like a leader, didn't just like, you know, tell everyone they were a leader, but like walked, talked that. That's also what I try to bring into coaching these women. So, and right now, yes, I'm coaching them on career paths that are traditional within ad agencies that might lead to a role in a marketing department at an OEM, you know, maybe a marketing director someday. But also, I've been encouraging a lot more women to take a look at like really great big local auto groups in the Detroit area that I know are hiring. And I'm like, I would totally go work for, you know, that auto group, like totally, you know, I just like take a chance on something that's not traditional that you haven't been taught at this really great university for advertising and marketing. But the last time I was there was just a couple Fridays ago, Brooke, and I asked the question, I said, because I lean a lot more on the media side, obviously being from a media partner, my expertise is not only as a digital expert, but really in paid media, paid search, paid video, paid all the things, but to understand the full depth and breadth. And something that's really anymore when we're interviewing people, that's like the cost of entry, is understanding programmatic media. And, you know, what it means to be a trader at an agency transacting on programmatic media and what those roles look like. And that programmatic media is very prevalent in the world of regional advertising in tier two. And we're going to start to see it more common in tier three. Eventually, we're not quite there, right? But like, how many of you understand programmatic media? Like, how many of you graduating today could go and do an interview where they asked you questions about programmatic media? And it was like, there's one class at Michigan State, I think, that's programmatic focused. And, you know, not to pick on them again too much, but just because I know this for a fact, I was thinking, okay, gosh, we got to really, like, in our mentorships, we have to really focus on a couple of things that are cost of entry in these roles that we're mentoring and grooming these future leaders for, because we're grooming them, but they're going to be our bosses someday.
Right.
So I'm like, I need to just tell you how it's got to be right from the get-go. No, but yeah, it's interesting to think about. It's like, yeah, I mean, for the last several years, all of my bosses have been younger than me, but it's been wonderful. Delightful, in fact.
And there's a different perspective, is there? I mean, there's so much talk about, oh, Gen Z, Alpha, all these younger generations, that they don't want to work. It's like, well, yes and no. They have seen what has happened to their predecessors and to their parents and their parents' parents and their siblings, yep, to see what has happened. And so it's like, well, if you're going to ghost me on my resume, I'll just ghost you, not show up. Well, if you don't, the trust is not there. Like with you and me, like we just, yeah, automatically like trust, like we'll go with it. Like, you want me to work 70 hours and pay for 40. Okay. Sounds good. Like, we just did that shit. Like, not the smartest thing. And this other generation's
an
like, yeah. And they're like, yeah, no, I'm not okay with that. Actually. No, we're not going to do that. So understanding, yeah, that. And so having that as a boss though, is to say, not that necessarily a Gen Z is going to be your boss, but having that younger generation to be like, no, you need time with your family, go take time with your family. Or, hey, you had something come up, work is going to be here when you get back. Like, that different mindset. Yeah. I have a good friend, his name's Josh Dreen. He does all this HR, just really great follow up, by the way. And he was telling about a story about a gal that had called in work and said, hey, I'm going to be sick. Boss approved it. She goes to bed. Her roommate's in the other front room. The boss shows up at the foot of her bed and just like waving. He's like, hey, where are you? Why are you not here? He didn't believe that she was actually sick. So he goes to her place, her apartment, and just stands over the bed. She's like, get the hell out of here. Like, what are you doing here? He's like, I need you to come in. And like that mentality, and while that's a very extreme example, it's also why people are afraid to take time off, why people won't take time off when they're having their PTO. It's like, well, you still got to have your cell phone on. You still got to be answering emails. And what's the point of taking time off? Like, understand how people, yeah, just don't be stupid. I guess that's the main bullet point there. Let's just go, don't be stupid. So let's go back to the diversity. Let's go back to diversity and inclusivity, because I know that's something that you drive a lot of. You talk a lot about this, and I love that you talk about this. How have you seen these values drive growth and innovation within teams and businesses?
Yes, I love this question. As a part of I Am Remarkable's workshops, Brooke, it's kind of, you know, the first 40 minutes or so, maybe I shouldn't reveal the timing. I'll keep the rest of that a surprise. But
it was,
I'll say, let's say like the first half, right? The first half of the workshops really emphasized around facts, not just, you know, the facts are not bragging, but hey, there's some research studies on how we got to the point that we're at and where we're at now and the need for more diverse boards, more females of color, actually, in leadership roles. I know we've referenced this before, but it's so important. That's the one area across the board that we're just lacking everywhere. So it's, you know, it's really important to kind of talk about this and understand where we've come and how much farther we have to go. But I think like the importance of the diversity and like, why should anyone even lean in and care about diversity and inclusivity? It's not just because it's like, oh, it's the thing of the moment to be a part of. Like, no, it actually impacts the bottom line. It actually impacts revenue. The more diverse a board is, in fact, just changing that by three people can increase profits by 35%. And that stat comes from our workshop as well. But there's other stats we kind of throw out there in research studies where we talk about that, you know, it's not just men who historically have stood in the way of women in the workplace, but it's actually been women, other women who have stood in the way of women in the workplace. And how important it is that we finally say, like, we were saying this before the show, Brooke, but like, ladies, we're starting to lose our rights. Like, we need start to come together. Like, let's be friends. Let's pump each other up. Let's be each other's cheerleader and advocate. And let's also remember that, like, just because we look the same and Brooke, you and I look the same, it doesn't mean that, like, this is, you know, who we come to when we're going to our people to consult on something big or a life decision or whatever. You know, I know we can both confidently say that we have friends that look like a bunch of different types of other folks that don't look like us with our blonde hair, white skin here right now. But, you know, like, that's the other thing is, like, the automotive industry, I want it to get younger. I want it to get more diverse. And I love it when I go into a regional meeting and, you know, there's 45 dealers in a meeting and a couple of agency folks. The agency folks are always women still. They're usually pretty young. So that's, you know, sometimes, not always. Recently, I've been traveling with some wonderful gentlemen too. So, but it's cool to kind of go into those rooms and to see them get younger and to see them get more female and to see them get more diverse. And the decisions that are made on behalf of these big local regional automotive groups get better. The reach gets better as the diversity changes and they sell more cars and trucks. And that's, you know, in service, and that's what we're here to do.
Yeah, there was, I think I've told this story before. If not, I'm going to tell again, but that Chris would, he's been in the auto world for, see, he somehow got out. I didn't know he could get out of the automotive industry, but apparently you can. But in his 30 years of being in either an owner or partner, whatever, maybe he goes, if I could have my entire staff be females, I would do that in a heartbeat because I know they are going to make more money. They're going to there's no like con side to this. It's like, everything is better when I have a female in there. And I'll go to say, whether it's female or sometimes I will just say diversity in general. If I walk into a place and I don't see me or someone that looks like me, why the hell would I ever buy from you? I was shopping website providers at one point, and I had sent out a bunch of technical jargon to the potential website provider. And the response I got back was, man, this guy really knows what he's talking about. Now, Brooke can be a male's name. I have friends that are Brooke. Use it with an E, it's not. And there was multiple back and forth. I finally just said, help me on this. Can only males know this shit? Like, I'm a little confused here. Needless to say, we did not go with that website company. But I'm watching the back and forth about, hey, this guy knows what he's talking about. Man, this guy is all over this. And I was like, you understand that this is a female asking these questions, right? But it's things like that. Like, if I had walked into that, I won't guarantee it, but I can all but guarantee it. If I walked into the business where this website company was, I would find it hard to believe that they had other females there because the mindset trickled on down that, man, only guys can be smart or only guys. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Like, seriously? I was like so mad. I was like, really? It's not my fault that your website provider, what I'm asking, you cannot answer and you don't know it's because I've called you out on your bullshit. But now it's like, so anyways, I say that all to me, not to shit on this website company, is to say, if you walk into a business and they don't look like you, why would you buy from them? So whether that's, we all know the younger generation is buying more vehicles than the Gen X's and the baby boomers. So you've got to have that type of face there. Understand that, hey, looking at metrics that I can see the number one demographic that's coming to our site is blah, 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 blah. Great. Do you have anyone there that speaks that language that looks like that? No. Do you know how much more you could be selling if you had people like that? Like, this is what's like, there's no pro con. It's just all pros to have diversity in the workplace. So that's my little spiel for the next minute here until I get on my next soapbox here, Law.
No, Brooke, you're so right. I think I'm reminded as you talk kind of more in that like professional vein of, you know, going around and kind of talking to dealers about what's really relevant right now. And I just kind of lost my train of thought there on that last thing that you said, but I think that it's really interesting because, yeah, we have to continue to evolve and we have to continue to create a place where everyone feels like they belong, going back to that, and like everyone feels like they can thrive. So I just love that question.
Thank you. I love that how you answered it. So I want to go back to your grandfather for a hot second, just because he was such a pivotal moment in what you do today, not a moment, but pivotal time, and he was as well. So considering his vision and the changes that you personally have witnessed, how does being the boss signify for women in automotive today? And then the follow-up that's going to be, how has this perception evolved?
Yes, it's kind of funny because I laugh at this question. I'm like, yeah, I guess I'm like, what am I the boss of? Because I'm an individual contributor. I'm in sales at Google. That's what I do for Google. I love that job, but I'm also a part of a professional organization that's, you know, a nonprofit. So that's volunteer time. And I'm the manager of my daughter's soccer team. I guess I'm maybe the boss there, like the boss of home. But that doesn't mean that I'm not driven to want to be in charge or be the boss. What you're referencing is just the fond memories of sitting at my grandfather's dealership and sitting in his big tan leather chair. So not a pink frou-frou chair with florals like the one I'm sitting in today, but rather like a really boss leather chair, probably something that'd be worth a lot of money now somewhere in a local dumpster and dives. But he just was like, you know, Laura, and it wasn't very common in 1979 to say this, but he was like, you can be anything you want, kiddo. You could be the boss someday. So it's more so that like, you don't have to have the title necessarily that you're the boss, but how are you paying it forward? What are you doing to prevent like the things that little La and little Brooke had to go through early on in our industry? How are you standing in between, you know, one of those girls that are just starting out now and helping them find their way? And I love that you referenced being a safe ride at those early industry events. Like, we forget some of these girls, you know, they're just going to Las Vegas for NADA is like a lot for a lot of us. But, you know, we have to look out for each other too in that respect as well. So it's like being the boss means a lot of different things. It's like, the number one thing, and this is I say it to my kids, I say it to my teammates, and I say it in AdCraft, everything I do is please, like the one thing that automotive retail has taught me is to show up. And like, show up is like, whatever that means to you, however that looks, if that's like, show up hungover, but you're here, okay, you did it, great, that's how you're going to show up. But like, you know, or you show up and you're in your three-piece suit and you're looking like $1 million ready to go and you've got a smile on, like however you show up, you're going to show up. But like, my God, just show up. It is not acceptable in automotive retail just to not show up. You got to be there. And I think I love that. I think I've fallen in love with that because so many times, you know, on the flip side of like, maybe flying in from New York to Detroit for a big meeting with someone, you know, really important, and you're going to lunch and it's really important to you, and then they cancel right as your flight is landing. And you're like, what?
Like that. We've all had it happen. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's happened. Yeah, it happens all the time to everyone. But you're the boss of owning that and making sure that like you recover from that, however that means to you. But you showed up. So yeah, that kind of goes hand in hand, those two things. It's like that premise of like, you know, maybe you should show up the way that you want to be perceived so that you can be the boss that you want to be and not just the boss of what it looks like to be in someone's square.
And that's a big one there of like, hey, that, I don't know if you know, but maybe once or twice I'd post on social media. I was just not a big social media person. I like my personal life personal. That's just how I am. But also having a company, you're like, that's going to change a little bit. But I attack myself. I was like, I will never contribute to the fakeness that's on social media. If I can't put on a mask to do my job, then I'm not doing my job because now I'm a fake person. I'm not being real. And those that know me, I'm probably realer than I need to be sometimes, but that's how I function. But I mean, I went off social media for a month and a half, almost 2 months. Just there was a lot of shit going on in my life personally. I go, I can't fake this. Like, that's just not who I am. I can't do that. Yeah. So showing up as the real person that you are, not who someone thinks that you are, or what you're saying that you're on social media. Like you standing in front of a Corvette when you're driving a Pinto, that is only perpetuating this bullshit that's out there. That it just be honest with yourself. And it's okay to show up not being able to give 100% because of maybe things are going on with your life, but it just, like you said, show up. That's, it's such totally. such a big one. I want to go back to your sales coaching for a hot second. Like, how do you integrate principles of empowerment and diversity, and what outcomes have you observed with it on this approach?
Yeah, that's a really good one. I would think so. Principles of empowerment and diversity. Yeah, I think that it's important when I'm meeting with my mentees, or even when I'm like leading one of our meetings where we're, you know, talking about I Am Remarkable and looking at our calendar of events, that's when I get a chance to kind of coach and to lead. And so integrating those, like the principles around someone needs to find their voice in order to feel empowered. How do you just start to even scratch the surface there? It's practice. And it's much like being an athlete, much like how I've heard you speak in professional settings in your keynote last year, is like practice as an athlete is like repetition and over and over and over and over and over again. And like, it's very much like strengthening a muscle to learn to be able to talk about yourself in a way that is talking about your accomplishments first. It's 10 times more challenging if you come from a background that's, you know, their cultural values are tied to not bragging about yourselves and never singling yourself out. You know, there is a South Asian facilitator friend of mine who has shared that there's actually like an evil eye premise against talking about yourself within her culture. And, you know, in Hindu culture, you just don't do that. So learning to like talk about herself in a way that was not bragging, that was her accomplishment led self first, was challenging. But, you know, I tell everyone, like, just give yourself some grace. My God, like, so you don't have to be perfect at this at first. Like, no one actually is. My 11-year-old listens to me and she says, "That's cringy, Mom. That's so cringy. It feels that way." You know, she's 12, by the way. She would kill me if she heard me call her 11. But yeah, you know, like it is cringy to like get up and stand in front of people and be like, "I am remarkable because I am a really good, solid friend," or "I am remarkable because I am working on a super challenging relationship with, you know, someone that hasn't been easy. I'm remarkable because I close my sales quota every quarter. I'm remarkable because I took the trash out last night." These are all reasons why we're remarkable. I'm remarkable, Brooke, because my mom was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer during COVID. And that was 2 weeks before we lost my mother-in-law, my husband's mom, unexpectedly during all of that hoopla. And we had 15 months with my mom, but becoming a caretaker overnight was nuts. And I have to say her name, but like I say this story every chance I get. My friend Colleen Papuga was my boss at the time. And she said, "Hey," she set up a meeting. Like, my little boy had been diagnosed with Tourette's. My mom was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer, and we lost my mother-in-law. And she set up a meeting with me, Brooke, and she was like, "Hey, so today's your last day in the office. Goodbye." And I was like, "Wait, no, I thought you were going to talk about like my, you know, whatever, something business related." She was like, "Nope. I am tapping you out, friend. That's too much for anyone to handle." And I was like, "Oh gosh." And she goes, "Yep, I know what's coming next. You're wondering, maybe you're going to need this time for later on. So I've already thought through that and you can have that too. So bye-bye, go handle your stuff." And it was like, there are some gifts in life that we save for, or we ask for, or we dream of going to Paris our whole entire lives. There are some gifts in life that we, you know, we manifest, we want. And then there are other gifts in life that like, you don't realize it, maybe not even in that moment when I was like, "What? I'm out of here for 3 months?" Right at the start of all of this, like, I got the best months with my mom. We went on walks every day. I took her to every chemo treatment. Like, I felt just like the best things came out of that, that now I feel incredibly lucky. I know that sounds crazy, but I've done a lot of grief counseling and, you know, a lot of a lot of repair and constant work on myself. I totally believe in therapy. Oh my God, I bet my therapist just loves it when I say her name, but Elizabeth Merriweather is like a second mom to me for all she's been. And then my Aunt Sharon kind of came out of the woodwork as a second mom. All these people have kind of like come from places that maybe they wouldn't have come before in my life had I not have gone through what I went through. So it's just the second part of my story now. I don't tell it to be a Debbie Downer. I tell it because no. It's like, it's incredibly important to name people like Colleen because she did something for me and she gave me a gift that how could you ever repay someone for that? Right.
I can't. And coming from the similar situation of mom, my mother never had to drink a drop of alcohol. She didn't smoke. I mean, while I have a sailor's mouth, my mom never swore. Like she, like, why does a German snow? And we find out that she's got terminal cancer and she's like, I refuse to know what the timetable is on this because I'm going to beat it. And so we all knew that she had probably like weeks to live. She ended up living longer than that, but I was flying back and I live in Chicago and where I was born is in Idaho. So it's a really tiny airport. Now I can fly into Salt Lake City, but I drive 3 hours. It's like, it's not worth it. I'll pay the $1,000 every week because you'll never get that time back. And I am very grateful to once again, work in an industry where I could be virtual. It didn't matter where. So I was flying back about every Thursday, Friday, I'd fly back, be there until Monday and fly out again. Because you'll never ever get that time back. Like ever get that time back.
Never.
I'm ever grateful for it. And in the same breath as, you know, being a caretaker is that some people will show up for a shift that's from 10 to 12 and think that's a caretaker. Well, I appreciate the service you're giving. It's around the clock. It doesn't stop. Like it's around the clock. So it's, I did not know that about you and your mother. And it's, you don't understand it until you're in that club. It's not a club that I would ever want anyone to be in. It's just, So my heart goes out to you. And I'm so grateful that between Colleen, providing that opportunity for you, because that is something that you'll never, ever get back. So I just, thank you. Thank you for that. I had no idea.
Yeah. And I didn't know that about your mom either. And I'm so sorry that you lost her. I bet she was as amazing as I'm envisioning
better.
Her. To be.
Like we have a fraction of the person she is.
We're gonna have to toast to our lovely mothers
next time
we're together.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're gonna
go ahead. No, I was just gonna say, because you're right about it being like that like club that you never want to be a part of, but you get it when you say like, but so much good comes too when you just kind of like pick your head up at the bottom, at the very, very bottom, and you can look around and you can see some light and you see it in people who have been there for you that you were like, okay, I didn't think that you would stand by me the way that you stood by me. And like, and then you see it in people that you were like, I thought you were going to like really support me and you didn't. And so good comes of bad. It's just, you know, going back to, you know, diversity and inclusivity, I know it can be a frictional thing. It can be hard for companies and small and large organizations to diversify, you know, because of that friction, but you know, it's important. So anyways, yes.
Well, I agree.
Well, cheers next time we're together.
Yeah, So going back to like, I'll say this, the whole I'm remarkable thing, you are remarkable. I have stood in awe of you from the sidelines for a very long time. And I am curious, what accomplishments are you most proud of, particularly those that have contributed to breaking down barriers for women and underrepresented groups?
What accomplishments? I would have to say, this was a pretty cool one. They are all so important. I don't ever like to single out one workshop over another, but last month I was invited to travel into New York, where Dan Adamchek is the Chevrolet regional director, and he has a bunch of women that report into him, zone managers and regional support. And he supported them all coming together, all of the female dealers in the entire Northeast region, you know, every state up Connecticut, New York, Boston, Philly, everywhere down to DC. He supported everyone coming together any female in any part of that organization for this leadership event. And it was a 2-day leadership event. And I was invited to do an I'm Remarkable workshop. And coincidentally, Colleen was with me too for that because she's also a facilitator. And so we got a chance to listen to Dan open up the 2-day summit. And he said almost what you said your friend, colleague, old boss said. He was like, I knew a long time ago that if I, you know, empowered the women around me that were smarter than me and better than me and, you know, all these wonderful things, you know, that I was going to be successful. And look, he was like the, you know, the lead guy kind of bringing all the women in the region together to celebrate them. And he said, you know, we took a survey and you said, I want to come and not just learn about the company and not just learn about the sales and what's on my mind, but I want to be a better version of me. He goes, I couldn't imagine anything better than bringing you all together for personal development, because when women get better and stronger and find their voices, we all do. And that was so inspiring to me. That wasn't just, you know, my accomplishment, but I just felt lucky to be there to lead them through the workshop. And the workshop was even, you know, even better than you. We heard, I gave a kidney to one of my customers. Oh my God. And I remarkably because they gave a kidney to one of my customers. I was like, you know, and that female dealer, that's a true story. She literally gave a kidney to one of her customers in one of their stores. Yeah. Oh. Like just stuff like that. Or I'm remarkable because, you know, the family dealership was going to be sold because my grandfather passed away unexpectedly and I just took it over and now I grew it and we have 18 stores. And, you know, I'm remarkable because I employ a town of 300 people or something, like, you know, these smaller numbers too. And like, I give back to my community in droves and I'm the highest grossing small business woman in the state. And like certain crazy things, Brooke, I was just like, where am I right now? I feel, and you know, this is a room that we probably all walk into in any seminar and any workshop and think like, yep, here me and 90 of my best friends are to sit here and like, you know, take notes or whatever, try to stay off our devices and like get something out of it. And it's like, that was such an honor to be a part of what Dan was doing there. And then also I think it was, you know, another accomplishment is just like any of these workshops that I get to lead, they all are so individual and unique and different, and they're just so special to me. So
I love it.
Yeah.
I am curious, like we talked in the very beginning about, you know, takeaways from the iRemarkable workshop. So I want to round out this conversation with that. What are some of the key takeaways of these incredible iRemarkable workshop that participants often find most transformative?
Yeah. It's always personal. So the key takeaway course at the end, we leave everyone with tools and tips and tricks, and we send people off to take a quick survey. We also flash our social media sites and encourage people to tag us if you had a great experience or if you took any photos or whatever. You know, keep this going because these are free workshops. But you know, I think there's a lot of the takeaway is just the fact that you leave with all kinds of things about you that make you remarkable, almost like a list, if you will. I'm trying to keep some of it, you know,
proprietary. Don't give it all away. I mean, come on.
How it works. Yeah, but no, you tangibly walk away with something that, you know, people have told me, Brooke, they've said, the list that I started in the workshop, I took it and I, you know, opened a Chrome tab and I just kind of translated it. And then Fridays I would start to add to that. And then I, you know, got a little more serious and I put a calendar reminder Fridays at noon on my calendar, put one more thing that's remarkable that I did this week. I started doing that with my boss. I started, instead of just like the boring one-on-one template that I usually fill out that I have ready to go for our conversation to streamline it, now I put 3 facts about why I'm remarkable. So I tell my boss now I'm remarkable because, and these are all business led facts. So they'll have to do, you know, with a goal or an objective or something around closing quota or customer objectives. They'll be very business priority led. But, you know, I give her kind of the cheat sheet of what I think she should then go on and tell maybe her boss or her boss's boss or whoever about, you know, not just me of hope, you know, that's obviously nice, but my team is working on examples like this. This is remarkable examples that are coming out of my team. So, and she's always grateful for stuff like that, I think. Maybe not. Laura, thank you for telling me why you're remarkable again. For the 90th
like, can you stop,
time.
Please? Come on. I'm done. We get your kick ass, your boss babe. I get it. You're good.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, Law, it has been so much fun getting to know you and to know more about I'm Remarkable. Uh-huh. We are at that point of the show, though, that we are jumping in to the lightning round with Law here. So Law, first and foremost, for those that are watching in our wonderful YouTube land or on LinkedIn, wherever you're watching, you can see her QR code right down here. For those that are listening in podcast land, how can they get in touch with you and how can they find you?
My LinkedIn is just Laura Ames Murphy. So I do have in parentheses my maiden name. You will see me A-M-E-S. So if you remember back to the beginning, it was Ames Chevrolet. So that'll be your one way to remember that as well. But yeah, I mean, I wish that I had any other affiliations outside really of LinkedIn, but you know, I'm just kind of doing my own thing for now, being lucky to be a extra sort of thought leader, I guess, in the space on shows like yours, Brooke. But I love to connect with people and I love to find out where people are going and what industry events are happening and what people are talking about and sharing. That's how I found your show as well, through LinkedIn and social media. So yes, that's the best way.
Perfect. Name of the show is Facts Not Feelings. So how are you distinguishing facts from feelings, either in personal life or it can be in your professional life?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly it, is just making sure that my list of what makes me remarkable is based on facts, because then it's really not feelings based anymore. Like, I could write those, I am remarkable because I am so kind every single day to everyone, and like, okay, like
that's a lie. I can say it's a lie for me.
Right, like you can write all the things, like, you know, feelings based facts, but like fact based facts, you can't argue with the data, right? It is what it is.
Agree. Yeah. Okay.
And I totally believe in that too. Like, I totally believe in what is it, like hacks and cheats and efficiencies and like finding ways to make your boss's job better and easier, and owning your story too is what is a part of like finding your facts. And then I've been telling some of my mentees, maybe I should have said this earlier in one of your questions, but whether it's you know, any kind of generative AI, whether it's ChatGPT or it's Google's Gemini, or you know, use your three facts that you think maybe are fact-based and have a generative AI tool maybe reframe it for you and ask it to remove feeling-based language from it. That's an actual, like, literal way that you can craft your superpower paragraph or your, like, boilerplate that you send after an interview or a great meeting with someone, just thanking them and reminding them why you're awesome and remarkable. It's really important. Like, it's funny. It's there's a lot of things that can be done, obviously, with generative AI, but personal use and like helping it reframe your brand and what you want to stand for, and just putting like 70 adjectives into it and saying, these are all things I stand for, I love, or values to me. Help me find, you know, a paragraph that embodies what makes me great. And like, yeah, sometimes it's just like a little spark that starts a fire. You're like, oh yeah, that's badass. I'm going to go put that on a cover letter, or I'm going to email that to someone that needs to hear today why I'm remarkable, because not enough people have heard today that I'm remarkable. So
I completely understand.
I think any day, Brooke, anymore, now that I get up and like my lungs work and my feet hit the floor, I'm like, how could it be a bad day?
It's funny. Lori Holter was on really early on in the show, into the show. And we are talking about the gratitude journal that she does. And I go, that was also something we were raised. Like, we came home every single night. It was around the dinner table, which I know that doesn't happen anymore. But there was a dinner table and people actually used the dining room, which they don't anymore. But my mom would always say, what is the best thing that happened to you today? And even if we had the shittiest day ever, she would sit there until we would come up with something positive. And sometimes it had just been a horrible day and you're like, I have electricity. I'm grateful for that. We have running water. I'm grateful for that. So little things like that.
Yeah. And
I've told the story multiple times where it's just like, you've got to find, just find one thing. And we can find one thing. I don't care. And not a lot of people know my history and my story. I can tell you that everyone's going to have it worse than what you have it. As bad as you think it is, there's someone that has it worse. So find the positive in all things. And it may be that your life is so horrible. And it really may be. I don't doubt that. There is something, though, you can focus on that, just that one thing. And then maybe the next day, try to find two things. And it may seem superficial, but please focus on that. Please focus on it. It's so crazy when I hear people say, oh, I'm not grateful for anything. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Like, there's so much. I don't care how bad you have it. In the depths of the darkest times of my life, I can still find something for which I was grateful. So there's always something. Just that's a big, big point of who I am also. So I thank you for that. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's round it out with what is one thing that most people wouldn't know about you?
Most people wouldn't know about me. And I hope this isn't like a softball, but I'm really into self-care.
Oh, nice.
And I don't know if that's, I don't know if that's like, and what I mean by that is like, and maybe it's from going through what we talked about too, but like self-care isn't selfish. Mm-hmm. And so I started a list, another list. I'd be happy to share it with you, Brooke, but it's my own list of like all of the things that I think is self-care. So the obvious ones on there are going to be like the massages or like the hair appointments or the nail appointments or stuff like that, right? That's what people think when they think of self-care. Mm-hmm. But like something that made its way onto that list was sneaking cocktails into a movie with my husband, like taking taking a couple bottles of rum or whatever and getting some Cokes and some popcorn. And like, we just like giggled like we were doing something bad and like we're such nerds, baby. But that's self-care to me. Or like, the road trip in Dollywood with my kids was one of my, like, self-care is just not selfish. Self-care is, I think working on yourself and a lot of people, I don't know how people see me. Brooke, the other thing about me that a lot of people do know, which is why I didn't say it, is that I don't give a fuck what anyone thinks about me.
I need to
care so much more. I need to care, but I just don't. I have this incredible ability to be like, you can think whatever you want. I can't think about it. Right. Yeah. Like it just, I can't take up space. There's too much great things that I want to keep consuming and learning. So I learned that self-care is a way to like, just, I think it's a trick. It's a way to keep yourself not being selfish, but being focused on the embetterment of you. And when I'm happier, when I'm healthier, I'm a better mom, I'm a better partner, I'm a better coworker, I'm a better absolutely everything. Learned this from being a caretaker and being like, you don't self-care when you're a caretaker. There's no such thing. So my heart goes out to all the caretakers out there. This is what I was going to say earlier. I hope that somebody's seeing this, maybe even a new caretaker, and you know, they learned something from us, or maybe somebody that saw us make a bond over something like losing our mothers together. And I hope it helps someone, because I know there's someone that's going to see this, Brooke, that's, you know, walking in those really tough shoes that we're referencing, and my heart goes out to them.
100% agree. I'm just a mic drop moment there. Let it be. Yes. 100%. That is yes, yes, yes. Well, thank you so much for not only being on the show, just for the person you are. Like, I'm so, so grateful that we were able to connect and meet actually in person, and then to continue to grow and just learn from you. Anytime I hear you speak or anytime I hear you do, I'm like, oh, I gotta be a part of that, just because you are remarkable. And not just because, hey, I have a remarkable website. It's so much more than what you do. So just thank you so much for being a part of this and being a part of the show and being a part of this industry, because those, all of us are better for knowing you and for you being in it. So just thank you so much for that.
Oh, thank you, Brooke. Appreciate you.
You're welcome. I feel the same way. All right, everyone, you know the drill at this point. Find a way to serve today. I don't care if it is opening a car door for someone. It can be a kind smile, especially over this episode today. You've seen that there's so many ways that we can positively impact someone else's life. Just be the joy in someone's life today. And with that, everyone, we'll see everybody next week. You've been been listening to Facts Not Feelings with Brooke Furness. Thank you for taking the time to listen. If you haven't already, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Leave us a rating. If you know a friend or a colleague will benefit from today's episode, share it with them. Until next week, find a way to serve someone. Find a way to help your neighbor. Remember, we are all in this together.